Diabolu Frank.
The following podcast contains mature language and spoilers. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, you're kind of breaking up. I think I'm losing the signal a little.
I've lost you here and there, so I'm seeing how this plays out. You're the first person that I've had any kind of extended long-distance internet communication with, so I'm seeing how this goes, because you're running through my mixer right now.
Count Dracula.
We did our zero episode. Mm-hmm. We all kind of talked about our origins. I don't know how much time you have, and I don't know how in-depth you want to go. But if you want to have the opportunity to introduce yourself to listeners and talk about your origins as a comic reader, feel free.
I was born early 80s. The first comics that I read were in 1988, and they were G.I. Joe. I probably started regularly collecting in 1990. I was reading G.I. Joe, I was reading X-Men, and I was reading Batman and Detective Comics. Those were the ones that I could find at the local store that I could get every month. And then once I actually discovered a local comic book store in my town, then the horizons.
Unless you grew up in the 90s, you didn't have access to whatever you wanted. You had to take whatever that newsstand carried.
That was for only a couple of years that I was limited. By the time I started hardcore collecting and selecting things, we were well into the early 90s, like right before the launch of Image Comics. All of the stuff that we rail against and complain about today, that was my entryway into comics.
Did you have anything like deeply embarrassing that you were collecting in the dawn of the Chromium Age? Because that's just what was there?
Somewhere in all of my long boxes, I probably have the first 20 issues of Rob Liefeld's X-Force. I wouldn't go back and ever touch again. Although even then, I don't think I ever gushed about the artwork. I liked Cable because he was different than any character that I really saw when I looked at the landscape of other superheroes.
Pretty much everybody from our generation cut their teeth on G.I. Joe, and Cable looked like a G.I. Joe character in the midst of the X-Men.
He did. He did have that military aspect to him, but I never got into Todd McFarlane stuff. I didn't read Spawn, and I didn't think his Spider-Man work was all that great. But I was a huge fan of Jim Lee up until he came back to Marvel to do Fantastic Four, The Heroes Reborn. That was kind of the first time where I saw him, and I was like, you know what? I don't think he's really taking his time on this.
Did you follow Wildcats?
I did. I did, actually, for a couple of years. That was one of the few Image books that I was getting. I was getting Wildcats. I was getting Wills Portacio's Wet Work series, Mark Silvestri's Cyberforce. And I think the other one, I really liked Stormwatch in the beginning before Warren Ellis took it over and became it pre-authority.
You're talking about 4 years worth of comics before he came along.
Yeah, he came on like issue 36 or 37.
So it's not so much you drank the Image Kool-Aid, you drank the Omage Studios.
Yes, very much so. Like, I didn't get into Youngblood or Savage Dragon. It was the stuff that Jim Lee's company was producing.
I have to cop to Rob Liefeld fan.
Anyway.
I was a fan of Liefeld, but I think part of that was that of all the people that I tried to swipe from, I could get the closest to Liefeld style. He had energy, the force, the enthusiasm that came through in his artwork.
Yes, I would agree with that. There is definitely a sense of energy and just boundless enthusiasm about his work.
But I never got that so much from Todd McFarlane. I'm with you on that. I respected what he did with Spider-Man. I knew that he changed the game with regard to that character and the level of detail he put into it. It didn't win me over, though. I had been a fan of Spider-Man prior to McFarlane. I'd already drifted away. He didn't bring me back in any shape or form. My brother actually collected the McFarlane run on Spider-Man, and I read it because he had it. And I read some Spawn, too. It never grabbed me.
Other than those few Image books, throughout the 90s, I was a pretty diehard Marvel zombie. I tried to get into DC because I knew those characters earlier, because I was familiar with them from the Superpowers cartoon and the Super Friends toy, like the action figure line. I knew about all those guys. I loved Hawkman, like the first time I saw the toy of him. I just thought that design, his helmet and the wings and everything about him just grabbed me. And to this day, he's still one of my favorite DC characters just because of that.
When you say the
image of his helmet.
When you say the toy, which toy was that? Was Superpowers?
Yeah.
So did you play with Superpowers as a kid?
I had a couple of them, and I had a few. And so again, before I found the comics, it was a lot of the toys, because again, we're talking like mid-80s. It was a lot of the toys that got me into who these characters were.
Well, and I can see, so too, that, like you were talking about getting into interested in the characters via Super Friends and those cartoons. But I don't think mm-hmm. that DC's newsstand presence was very strong by the early 90s. It seemed like Marvel was very much dominating there. So I don't know that you really had a lot of options, and if you wanted to pick those books up, that you'd be able to.
No, and like the ones that I read were Batman and Detective Comics, because I had seen the Batman movie in 1989, and the local channels used to replay the Adam West Batman TV show from the 60s. So that was the character that I knew more than the others. So that was what I read. In the 90s, once I found comic shops, I tried like heck to get into DC, and I couldn't do it. Like every year, whenever they would have some kind of event like Zero Hour or Millennium or something, I would try and dip my finger and grab like a latch onto those characters, and nothing was sticking. I didn't really start getting into DC comics until the era of Dan Didio.
It was sorry.
It's the Didio Geoff Johns era. That was when I started getting into DC. Green Lantern Rebirth was kind of like my gateway into sort of modern DC, but it also allowed me to jump back, and I started collecting a ton of Showcase Presents, old back issues. So I would go back and reread the Silver and Bronze Age comics and fell in love with the characters a lot more. But it was stories like Green Lantern Rebirth and Identity Crisis that made me more interested in these characters than I had been for most of my life.
Now, you said too that you were a hardcore Marvel zombie. How long into the 90s did that last?
From when I started reading G.I. Joe, but then like the Marvel superheroes was about 1990 or 1991 was when I started getting X-Men. I started getting it right around the time Chris Claremont was leaving the book.
You keep just catching catching the next trains in for like generationally, it seems like.
Yeah, it is. But then I was reading them up until right before I left for college. So there was probably the late 90s. I probably jumped off of sort of comics in general. If I was reading anything, I was probably reading Dark Horse stuff like Hellboy and Sin City. And then I came back pretty hardcore in the early 2000s. I only really left Marvel for about 2 or 3 years in the late 90s.
Your home base initially, though, was the X titles. Then you left and you came back. Mm-hmm. Did you come back to Marvel?
For all of the flack that it gets today, and it gets a lot of criticism, and I would say some of it is deserved, I really liked J. Michael Straczynski's run on Amazing. I think the first half of his run is really strong, and then he started doing some terrible things like bringing back Gwen Stacy and having her an affair with Norman Osborn, and then there was the One More Day stuff.
Yeah, I still had my shot when that was starting, and I saw that arc. I saw people getting very excited about him, especially because there was a strong Babylon 5 contingent that came onto Amazing Spider-Man, not for Spider-Man, but for Straczynski. And those guys slowly drifted away, but the Spider-Man guys were still very excited about him until this happens to, I think, most writers during their runs, especially having an extended run, because he was on that book for a good long while, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was probably 5 or 6 years.
It's sort of the same conundrum you have with bands, where you have all these years to write your first album, and then you've got 6 months to write that second album. It seems like a creator will get all their good ideas, all that stuff they've been waiting to tell for years out in the first couple of years, and then if they stick around long enough, turn to sour, essentially.
Yeah, I agree. And I think part of it was the voice that he gave for Peter Parker. He made the character funny, and he made him interesting in a way that I hadn't seen previous writers for Spider-Man really do. I liked it better than Roger Stern's stuff and what came after that.
And I think that one thing that was nice about that too is he allowed Parker to evolve, because throughout the 80s and 90s, he seemed to be stuck in that early 20s, doesn't really know what he's doing, still doing the same stuff to make money that he was doing in his teens. And then all of a sudden, he's using his science. He's back at the university, but he's teaching instead of as a student. It was a sense that, okay, this guy's finally got some traction again.
Yeah, he was. He was growing up. He was becoming an adult, which I think some fans just rejected that. They didn't want that. They wanted the perpetual kid, which they were also getting because Ultimate Spider-Man came out at that exact same time. Marvel was giving two different fan bases the Spider-Man that they could have and they could like.
But of course, the Ultimate Spider-Man wasn't real, so you couldn't just jump ship if you weren't happy with the progression in the main book.
Of course. But in that same era, those early mid-2000s, Mark Waid got me interested in the Fantastic Four for the first time ever. The local comic store that I was going to, Mark Waid's first issue, it was like Fantastic Four Volume 3, Issue 60, I think. And it was a 25-cent issue. They did like a special markdown discount. It was like 25 or 29 cents. It was like the cost of a postage stamp.
I wanted to say that that might have been the 9-cent issue that they did. I want to say that there was...
It was a 9-cent issue or something. I had a pull box in my comic store, like put that in my box. And when I went to check it out, I was like, why'd you give me Fantastic Four? I never read this. He's like, oh, you're going to love this. Just read this. I was like, seriously, I don't like the Fantastic Four. These guys are dumb. And he was like, it's 9 cents. If you don't like it, come back. I'll give you the 9 cents back. I bought it and I put it on my shelf and I didn't look at it for months. I just like completely forgot about it. It just got buried. And then finally, I think I was moving and I was unpacking stuff and I found it. And I was like, I've got a few minutes to kill. Let me read through this. And I loved it. Mark Waid and Mike Waringo's first issue on that series might be my favorite one-shot comic ever. They just completely turned around my attitude toward the characters. Era that I was growing up in, like the sort of the cultural era, everything. The Fantastic Four, they were old. They were lame. They were everything that was not cool. They weren't Cable. You know, I grew up thinking that Captain America, he was a tool of the government, and I was a 90s grunge rock kid, so that was not cool. I didn't like Captain America. My first like real exposure to Superman in comics was through The Dark Knight Returns, so I thought Superman was a tool. You know, I was really sort of... My impressions of these characters were colored, and I kind of had to grow out of these misconceptions and realize what I was missing.
I don't know if you ever listened to Michael Bailey's views from the Long Box, but he definitely rails Frank Miller as like one of the worst people to ever touch Superman because he ruined Superman for so many people.
I couldn't argue with that in my case. I mean, it did take a long time for me to even give Superman a chance.
And it came along at the wrong time because I think I read Dark Knight sometime around 88 or 89, and I'd just gotten over a period where I was high off Superman because Byrne had brought me to the franchise. And he was like my favorite hero for 6 months or so. And then the bloom fell off the rose when it came to Byrne. And then I read Dark Knight. And that was pretty much the nail in the coffin for me being a Superman fan for several years. And then with the case of Captain America, if I hadn't grown up when I did and gotten to pick up the Demetis, Mike Zeck material and the early good Gruenwald stuff, I probably would have never been a Captain America fan either. If I had read the latter Gruenwald stuff, talk about a run that soured and stayed sour for a damn long time, which was, I think, one of the main problems, because you're talking about, you specifically note Captain America and the Fantastic Four. And those were books that were victims of cronyism. Because after Jim Shooter got run off, Tom DeFalco let himself and a bunch of other people sit on those books for an eternity. There's never been a worse period for the Fantastic Four than the DeFalco years, because not only was he not telling good Fantastic Four stories in general, but then when he tried to 90s them up and tart up Sue Richards and all that stuff, just terrible. And you can only throw hollow foil covers out there so many times. You can only do so many white embossed Johnny Storm Supernova covers before the sales are going to finally take a major hit, because nobody's reading it. They're just speculating on it.
I think the one Fantastic Four book in the 90s that I tried to get was when they replaced Reed Richards with Ant-Man for a couple issues. Ant-Man was another character that I've always liked just because of his design. I like the look of classic helmet.
Either one, the
Scott Lang and Hank Pym. I almost don't distinguish between the two of them when I'm just thinking about Ant-Man, because I just think about the visual aesthetic of the character. There's something about the suit and that helmet that just grabs my attention, just like Hawkman.
See, I have a negative reaction to Hank Pym because, A, his history, and I was first familiarized with the character through West Coast Avengers when he was going through his identity crisis, when he was suicidal, when they were constantly regurgitating all the stuff he'd done. So I really have issues with Ant-Man. Plus, they're always trying to fight Ant-Man against Adam, and Adam's always going to be the one that I favor. But Scott Lang, I always kind of break to, because he didn't have the baggage, and his early appearances were drawn by Bob Layton, and who gave him that sleek look with any really brought out the chrome in the helmet. I just give that guy a lot more slack than I ever did Hank Pym. Totally derailed you again. Sorry about that. Oh, I lost you. Yep. Obviously, the people who create comic books want you to read the things. Comic books aren't meant to be precious. They're pop art. They're junk culture. But they're our culture. If you're listening to this podcast, it's your culture. Most people, when they talk about comic books, they're talking about the so-called Big Two, Marvel Comics and DC Comics. It strikes us, though, that the entire comic book industry is undervalued by the general public. As comic aficionados, we'd like to have a podcast out there that covers the entire rest of the industry, and for that purpose, we will be your underguides.
If you're sitting around and you find yourself bitching about comic books all the time and how comic books suck and how back in your day comic books were good, take a listen to the underguides, and you'll maybe open up a little doorway to some independent comic books that you hadn't read before. It doesn't have Spider-Man in it, or a Wolverine, or a Green Lantern in it, but it talks about people's lives and stuff, and sometimes you can identify with. If you're wondering where all the good writers and stuff went that don't write your comic books anymore, they're making independent stuff, so maybe we may cover it, and you may find something you can go check out.
Anyway, where were we talking about Ant-Man still?
I just broke in and talked about the things, why I like Scott Lang and didn't like Hank Pym. And you were talking about, where did Ant-Man come in from? It was a team-up, right? Or wasn't he like, he'd replaced Reed Richards in the Fantastic Four?
Yeah. And they brought him in for that. And I think I read that issue just because I liked the design of the costume. That was my introduction to the character. I didn't learn about who Hank Pym was until a few years later. Again, in the 90s, it was mostly focused on the X-Men verse. And by then, there were 4, 5, 6 X-Men books that I could read. I would occasionally dabble into Peter David's Hulk, and I would occasionally read some of whatever Spider-Man was going on. I did collect every issue of Maximum Carnage, that Spider-Man event. Jason at the time. I thought that was the coolest thing ever. I regret that decision. But yeah,
we
going back.
We all have those, though. You're pure of heart. You haven't been contaminated by prejudices and continuity. What got me into DC was Titans Hunts, one of the most hated arcs for Titans fans. But for me, I always will have an affection for Panther and Phantasm and all these characters that everybody think is dreadful because they were mine.
Yeah, of course.
And especially in the 90s, there was that big push for the old stuff is bad. You want the new stuff. Get the new characters. Get them on the ground floor. So there's a little bit of an indoctrination quality to that, too.
Well, that's why it's like every generation has their young female X-Men character. That's their intro into the family. It was Kitty Pryde for the longest time. Then they replaced her with Jubilee. Then they replaced her with some other girl. During the Joss Whedon run on Astonishing X-Men, he came up with this Armor Girl, who was the young teenage X-Men sidekick. Every generation, they create the same stock character for the new readers to attach to.
This is true.
But anyway, I agree with most of your thoughts about Hank Pym. I've always liked the character a little bit more, but I reread in the regular Avengers book the trial of Hank Pym and all of those things leading up to him hitting Janet and then him going crazy and going to jail. There was a lot of good stuff in that I liked. I just think the problem was, and it's partially due to the nature of the serial storytelling of comics, they couldn't get rid of him forever. They kept bringing him back, so they had to keep redeeming him in order to justify bringing him back. And really, they just needed to write him out. They needed to make him go crazy and become a villain, or they needed to kill him off.
Yeah, they wouldn't seem to commit either way, and I do think that was the major problem. He was a malingerer.
Yeah, yeah. But as you said, and you're right, Scott Lang didn't have any of that excess baggage, and he had a good story with being an ex-con who is bequeathed this armor by the guy who doesn't need it anymore. I am really excited for Ant-Man. I might be the only one, but I think I'm really excited to see that movie when it comes out.
I'm very disappointed for the movie that plays between my ears that Edgar Wright would have directed, especially because Scott Pilgrim, I think, is just a fantastic movie. It's so propulsive. Yeah. It sucks your eyeballs out of your head and puts them into that screen. You can't let that movie go once it starts running. But the problem I have is that I don't like Shaun of the Dead. I've never seen Hot Fuzz. I've seen bits and pieces of other stuff he's been involved with, and I'm not that big of an Edgar Wright fan in general. I sometimes wonder if he doesn't have the same issues as the actor Terrence Howard.
The original Rhodey.
Right, where Marvel didn't know what they were doing yet, and they cut these deals, and Marvel hadn't become Marvel Studios yet. And same thing with Ed Norton on Incredible Hulk, where those were their stumbling blocks, their learning curve. And Edgar Wright had been there from that same period of time where it's like, yeah, we've got Edgar Wright. It's great. And then there's this long, long development process. And finally, by the end of it, Marvel Studios had changed. And I wonder if maybe Edgar Wright's movie wouldn't have been the movie that we wanted to see because there are certain expectations with the Marvel Studios movie now, where before it could have been maybe more or less a fair, but now we want our stinger, we want our continuity ties. And I don't think he was one to play ball with that. From what I've read, they're keeping a lot of his script. They're just making alterations to make it more of a piece with the Marvel Universe, which was apparently his problem and may have ended up being a big problem for the movie ultimately.
Maybe this is just me being an optimist. I think if anything, what will change will be the tone and visual style. I think it will feel more like a House Marvel project. I think Edgar Wright, more than anything, would have brought, you would have seen, hey, this is different than every other Marvel movie. And now you might not get that feeling. You might just say, yeah, it kind of looks like the Thor movies and Iron Man 3. It kind of just had that sort of House style.
I have a conspiracy theory. One of the things I think may have driven Edgar Wright off is, you remember the whole Hope Van Dyne hubbub where they announced that it wasn't going to be Janet, the movie was going to be Hope. My conspiracy theory, and one of the things I think that probably ticked off Edgar Wright, was I think that Marvel is going to have the Avengers exist prior to the Avengers. Because Marvel's played with that a lot in continuity, where these were the precursor to the Avengers, the first Avengers. And I think you're going to have Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne in their prime forming this precursor to the Avengers that will probably use that actual name and will be where S.H.I.E.L.D. got the name from, because the Avengers name is made to make sense by Tony Stark's speech in Avengers. But,
right, but Nick Fury in the first Iron Man, Nick Fury said the Avengers Initiative, the name existed before that.
Yeah, and you have to ask why that would exist. And I think the issue with Hank Pym is whenever he comes up, you know what they'd always like to do on these internet articles? They always want to bring up the salacious stuff. So every single time that character ever appeared, they were going to mention he was a wife beater, and Janet is always going to be the one who got beaten and stayed. And there was always going to be people who had a problem with the message that that would send to kids, even if it was never referenced in the cinematic universe.
Right.
But if you have Hope Van Dyne as the daughter of a perhaps difficult parentage, then she's absolved of their sins. She can be the Wasp in continuity without it being an issue for people.
I totally agree. That sounds completely plausible. And I figured when they said it's Hope Van Dyne, it's not going to be the Wasp, I was like, oh, they'll still make her the Wasp. I am completely confident that Evangeline Lilly will shrink down and use the power to at some point in this movie.
Why would you cast somebody who has a history with these type of serialized stories, right, and with action movies if she was just going to be the tacked on love interest.
Yeah, exactly. And they could be seeding that world building of the early proto Avengers. They're doing the Agent Carter series, which is set in the 40s.
Dinah Lance is a fighter, and her one-woman war is against the czars of crime, the frightened men who dread the blonde bombshell, otherwise known as Black Canary. Writer Robert Kaniger and artist Carmine Infantino created Black Canary in 1947. She debuted as a masked femme fatale that kind of skirted the law, but pretty quickly she evolved into a civic-minded crime fighter. She has mastered multiple martial arts disciplines and unarmed combat forms. Her canary cry, when properly focused, is powerful enough to punch a hole through a wall. Black Canary has, in one form or another, been part of multiple incarnations of the Justice League, the Justice Society, and Birds of Prey. I freaking fell in love with Black Canary, and I'm proud to podcast about her adventures in comics and television. Flowers and Fishnets, a Black Canary podcast.
Yeah, no. Oh, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still with you.
Oh, sorry. Are you... Another tangent. Gosh, that Ike Perlmutter thing, just the whole thing with Marvel and Fantastic Four just drives me crazy.
Perlmutter is the nexus of evil at Marvel because people love working for Marvel and they leave because they can't make decent money at that company. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the only reasons why anybody still works at DC at this point is because at least you're getting paid there to some mm-hmm. degree. Marvel just doesn't want to pay people. Marvel wants them to love their jobs and for love to be enough. And that's Perlmutter. That's his bean counting and his street. Streamlining. Mm-hmm. He wants to make sure that Marvel is always super profitable, and he'll sacrifice people to get there.
When I heard that he's canceling Fantastic Four just to spite Fox because they've got the movie and all the merchandising rights, I think Fox's appropriate and justified response is to laugh in his face because the movies do not benefit from the Fantastic Four comic.
Well, that's true, but the movies would benefit from action figures that they're not going to put out because Marvel put the kibosh on that.
So. Right, that's true, but the comic could benefit from the movie, potentially.
Oh, certainly. Well, and also my understanding is they've had to take everything off the walls related to X-Men or Fantastic Four at Marvel just
they
in case
even
he shows
their,
up.
Their images up there, yeah.
There's definitely an element of irrationality, and unfortunately he has the power to back up that irrationality. But at the same time, you talked about how you came into that property with Mark Waid, mm-hmm. and as far as I can see, that's the last time anybody really had a good handle on that book anyway.
I really liked Jonathan Hickman's run. He was on it for a couple years not too long ago, and he did some really interesting things that did not feel like they were just retreads of what Kirby and Byrne had done before. I mean, it used some of those same elements, but he also brought a lot of new and fresh ideas to that. I liked Jonathan Hickman's run.
Every time I try to poo-poo FF, somebody comes back and says, Jonathan Hickman! But I personally have issues with Hickman because he's one of those guys. I like my Marvel to be Marvel and my DC to be DC. I like for the creators to play to each company's strengths or go into their own house, do an Image book. And of course, Hickman came out of Image, but it feels to me like Jonathan Hickman is the Grant Morrison of Marvel, and I don't think Marvel is supposed to have a Grant Morrison. I know he had a great run on X-Men. I'm not saying that he can't write for them, but that Mad Scotsman aspect of the guy who's doing stuff like Multiversity, that mm-hmm. kind of stuff belongs at a company like DC. It doesn't fit as well with Marvel, and that's what Hickman does. He just keeps being the Grant Morrison of Marvel.
If Jonathan Hickman's Avengers run that's been going on for the last couple of years, if that was on the other side, that was what Justice League had been for the last couple of years, it would be like the greatest Justice League ever. Those really big, high concepts, like those things. That would be the Justice League that I would want to see.
Yeah, because I mean, I tried to read that run. I liked elements of it, but there was not enough Marvel to that. It just felt so DC. It got under my skin.
Yeah, it was...
Plus, they need more Black Panther. They got away from. They started out with Black Panther pretty heavy there at the beginning, and then they got too far away from him, and he's one of the main reasons why I wanted to pick that up.
With his new Avengers, I love the dynamic that he gave to Black Panther and Namor at the beginning. I would read a solo Black Panther book by Jonathan Hickman in a second.
I'd have to cop to that as well. I like it when a clearly intelligent writer can take on a clearly intelligent character. One of the problems I've had with Black Panther as far as how he's been written in the past is well-intentioned, but not necessarily intellectual people trying to write him, and so they write him as Daredevil, where he's supposed to be your Mr. Fantastic type with Batman's skill. That should be one of the most impressive characters in the Marvel roster, and instead he's the guy who replaces Daredevil. Honestly, as far as how he's written, rightfully so oft times, because he's always pushed down as far as what he's capable of doing in the books that people herald the most. As much as I like Don McGregor's work in the 70s, that was not a guy who is particularly capable. That's a guy who was prone to getting his ass whipped incessantly, seemingly.
Right. You know what I hope we get in the eventual Black Panther movie? Not too long ago, I reread the whole Chris Priest run on Black Panther. The narrator character, the State Department guy.
Ross.
Yeah, Everett Ross. He had this, I don't even remember what issue was. It was buried somewhere in the middle, but it might have been like within the first year. He was describing Black Panther to somebody. And what he said about T'Challa was, he's like, what nobody realizes is that T'Challa has the mind of a mob boss or something like that. Like, that's the way he looks at people. Like, he sort of sees the world through the eyes of a gangster. And I thought, what a really fascinating and interesting way of approaching one of these heroes. And I was like, what if when they do the Black Panther movie, they sort of picture T'Challa's story arc like Al Pacino's character from the first Godfather of Michael Corleone.
I see where you're going with that. Yeah, see, because that's the thing I like about Black Panther is I think there was a Toy Biz exclusive Black Panther action figure that came out that you had to get it through some special means. And that's back when I had the shop, so I was proud of it. I put it up in the shop. And I can't tell you how many kids would point and go, Batman! And what kids don't understand, what readers don't understand, is that so much of what Batman is now was what Black Panther was in the late 60s. But what I think defines that character is that he's got, like you said, like a mob boss. He's got a smile on his face. He seems so nice and so welcoming, and he's such a sweetheart. But that guy can go cold on you quick. He's always sizing you up. He's always figuring out what your weaknesses are so that he can exploit them. So it is very much like that with this Janus figure. He's so much good and so much evil, but it's not evil. It's just pragmatism with him.
Right. He doesn't trust. He's from a culture that is fundamentally alien to our sort of Western civilization. His values are not our own, and we don't understand that.
Prizes secrecy, prizes knowing vulnerabilities of other people, prizes isolation.
He's always been one of my favorite Marvel characters.
It took Priest to do that for me. He was a character that I always was interested in because I thought he looked cool, and I'd read the books and was unimpressed, and then finally Christopher Priest managed to turn me on to that character. Even though that run went out with a major whimper, I still held on that affection for him. I'm proud of that guy. I want to see him do well, and I want to see Chiwetel Ejiofor in that movie if at all possible.
I think they'll probably get somebody like Chadwick Boseman, who I would also be fine with. But I think Chiwetel Ejiofor would be a phenomenal T'Challa. I would see the shit out of that movie.
Well, he's a guy, he radiates that intelligence. He's a guy, you just look at him and you know he's got wheels turning in his brain. And if they can't get him, they can't get him. But I'm hoping that, given his history with Joss Whedon, it could happen.
Oh, yeah,
I understand,
yeah,
though, he's probably a little old at this point. They may not want to go that away. And I'm sure there are other capable actors. That's just my guy, though. That's the one I got my fingers crossed for.
I had him in mind like as early as like 5 years ago. And at this point, it might be too late for that. But I hope they do. And
did you ever see Serenity?
Oh, yeah. That was the first time I noticed him. Yeah.
Oh, I got a little bit of echo there. Sorry, hold on a second. Yeah. So he's been by that. Oh, shit. Let me stop for a second because I'm getting this weird echo. Let me see if I can do something about that.
It's an old joke. Frank doesn't pronounce it thesaurus. He pronounces it thesaurus.
Thesaurus?
And when I asked him, what the fuck is a thesaurus? He's like, I don't believe in saying it thesaurus. It sounds like a goddamn dinosaur.
Three friends.
Come, my baby.
The world is not right.
The Looney Tunes Planets comes out.
Too many topics.
Please, I like Galvatron.
It's just so much been there, done that.
Super cookie-cutter hip-hop with it.
One podcast.
The lead singer of Nickelback doesn't have demons.
He gave away his heart.
Zero fucks given.
How sad is it that Axl Rose didn't kill himself for OD?
Django.
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 Where did the plastic stop and the human flesh start?
Oh, no.
Tony, you're close. We're going to kick you out of the podcast.
Your old fine podcast.
It's just so well done.
There you
go. Okay. Good. I think the echo's gone.
I don't hear anything, so yeah.
Excellent. Were you hearing the echo too?
I was a little bit. Actually, before you mentioned it, I was hearing a bit.
I'm loving it. It's so great to have a mixer. The sound is so much better, and I'm having to edit so much less in terms of fixing the audio quality, but it does interact sometimes kind of weirdly with things. So I'm glad the reboot worked.
Getting back to the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the movies, I think we've sort of talked about this online before. They do seem to be lacking in terms of villains. Part of that is how they present the villains, but I also don't think that they've got the greatest bench of villains for the Avengers characters.
I don't know that I would agree with that. My prime example would be Thor the Dark World, where they burn through Malachi the Accursed and Curse as though they're nothing, and you could have devoted movies to either one of those characters if you'd mined the comics and made use out of them. that. And instead, they turn in this. I hate that movie. I think it's a completely disposable movie. I don't think that history will be kind to that flick, especially because it's not going to have any bearing on anything for the most part. And that was just being wasteful. But the thing of it is getting the most mileage out of those characters. I'm pretty sick of Loki, but I know people love that character, and he's going to keep selling movie tickets for Thor for at least the third chapter. So what you need to do is make sure that you've cast well and that you're getting the most out of your villains. But again, one of the theories is that the Marvel's not looking to spotlight the villains. They want to keep your focus on the heroes that they've got in 9-picture contracts.
Which is refreshing. I like that, and I appreciate that.
Well, I mean, it's distressing that I was going to see Batman movies for the guy who was playing the villain for that particular episode.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, kids have seen these movies. You want the kids to root for the heroes, not the villains. And I don't know that paradigm ever shifted, but as an adult, certainly I tended to root for the villains over the heroes because they were the interesting ones.
Mm-hmm. True, yeah. The movies could really use like a Doctor Doom figure.
Going to the Peter Parker thing, there's so many different Peter Parkers that even if you can't access that character, you just go to the next guy that's very similar to Parker. There's a few Dooms floating around there. They could take Kang and turn him into a Doom. Kang is a guy I never got a lot out of, and there's enough there in terms of the technology and his general look that they could just turn him into an ersatz Doctor Doom for the Marvel Universe, and I think that the character would actually be improved in cinematically and in the comics that way.
Yeah, no, I agree. They could do he would be the next one I would want. I've mentioned this like in the comment section. I am not as familiar with Marvel's cosmic side, so when I saw Thanos at the end of the Avengers, I was like, okay, that's interesting. That's not the next villain I would like to see. I would much rather see Ultron or Kang or even like an assemblage of the Masters of Evil.
Yeah, but I really thought they would end up going toward the Masters of Evil.
I got a bad feeling about this.
You'd be feeling a lot better, Han, if you were listening to Dead Boffin Spies, a Star Wars podcast hosted by me, Ryan Daly.
That doesn't sound too hard.
It's not hard. You just check out Dead Boffin Spies on iTunes, Facebook, or the blog page, deadboffinspies.blogspot.com.
Don't be too proud of this technological terror you've constructed.
Well, I don't know if terror is an appropriate description. It's a podcast that combines everything you love about me talking and some of what you love about Star Wars.
I want to learn the ways of the Force and become a Jedi like my father.
Fine, whatever. Do that after you listen to Dead Boffin Spies.
Yoda. You seek Yoda.
No, you seek Dead Boffin Spies, a Star Wars podcast. Check it out. It beats kissing a Wookiee, I would think.
All right. Well, it was good talking to you for the first time. Actually,
I had fun with it. Were you comfortable? Were you happy with how it worked out?
Oh no, none of this is usable. I'm putting an injunction. You can't use this. No, this was great, and I hope the sound quality turns out all right. Hopefully,
I think it will. Let me tell you, man, I'm loving this mixer. I caress it. It's not appropriate, but what I do in my own home, nobody can condemn me for. But no, I think it'll actually be pretty good. I've tested this before and it sounded really good. I'm so happy with this thing. And I hope you'll be happy with how you come out.
Cool. I hope so.
I guarantee you I've got material here. So it's not about, oh, we have to rush and fix something real quick. I guarantee you the way that I have in mind to do the show, you've given me plenty to work with. In fact, I'm going to cannibalize this and get all kinds of use out of it. You're going to be like, holy crap, they're using me again?
This will be the next 10 episodes of the show.
You're going to be like Alan Moore. I wrote 3 stories in the 80s and the entire DC line is based on them now.
Cool.
We've set this up. We've broken the ice. We're comfortable. We're okay.
Well, let's not say comfortable, but...
You're not comfortable? I'm comfortable. Okay. I'm in my pajamas. I'm terribly comfortable.
I've never been really what you'd call comfortable. Anyway.
That's okay. That can work. I can use nervous energy.
I got that in spades.
All right, you go.
We received new Twitter follows from # GetBenPhrases the 200K, Amino Acid Comic Book, Anthony Tran, Ask the Moon, Barry Goodall, Blocking Inside, Cinema Spartan, Comical Podcast, Comics Fix, Crowdfund Resources, Dats Life, DATS Podcast, El Geekador, Elijah Medj, LMA Kuhlman, Everlook Studios, The Guys from Queens Podcast Network, How Is This Movie, International Association of Internet Broadcasters, Isabella Pearls, Jason Starr, Killer Kitch, The Lesbian Geek, Martin Vincent, Matt Min Podcast, Maya at Maya Sundval, P. Plop Cartoons, Skip to the End Podcast, Stephen Courtney, Supervillain Gaming, The First Bat, What the Tech, and WordPress Extreme. We received Twitter favorites from Aces and Eights Press, Adam Blackmoon, Ange, Anthony Durso, Anti-Fascist, Baked English, Ben Cohen, Charles Washington, Charlton Hero, Chris Callahan, Chris Michael, Chris Thompson, CJ, Count Druncula, David Golding Artist, Dead Vinyl, DSNRS, Il Perrin, Ed Moore, Eternal Rage, Evil Pilgrim, Fantastiverse, Felicia at Proxy, Future Primitive, Harrison Rawdon, The Irredeemable Shag, Josias Arbello, Keith G. Baker, Kim Doyle, Legion Bloggers, Longbox Graveyard, Lord Horstocles, Luke Dobb, Martin Gray, Marzo Khalif, Moldwitch, Mystery Vlog, Odell Abner Dracula, Orbital Comics, Oscar Olalde, Outside Longbox, Perfect Chaos, Randy Caldwell, Randy Micah Smith, Run With Comics, Sheena is a Punk Rocker, Show Me Your Bits Podcast, Sir Kayak, Small Time, Superboy, Sin, Tawala Sharp, Top 5 Road Crew, Wetsuit at Lucid Cadet, and Ziggy at Mr. Jaffrey. Retweets came from Aces and Eights Press, Adam Blackmoon, Ange, The Anti-Fascist, The Artpreneurs, Image, Charlton Hero, Chris Thompson, Chris William, CJ, The Comic Syndicate, Count Druncula, The Rusty Nut at Jewelry for Ladies, Dead Vinyl, Eternal Rage, Fantastiverse, Felicia, Firestorm Fan, Floto Span, Future Primitive, Josias Arbello, Keith G. Baker, Martin Gray, My Star Wars Story, Mystery Vlog, Odell Abner Dracula, Pure Residual Income, Randy Micah Smith, who added, by all means, happy to help, Sir Kayak at Vader Loves SWDW, Sin at Alias Scarecrow, Tawala Sharp at Tawala, and Your Face 64. We also have to give out a no prize to Sin at Alias Scarecrow for figuring out that the subject of week before last podcast was Lady Demon. After dozens of guesses from various tweeters, he was the only one who could pull it all together. Sheena's a Punk Rocker had us for their hashtag Friday follow. Adam Blackmoon had us for hashtag Monday Madness, hashtag Tuesday Titans, hashtag Wednesday Warriors, and hashtag Follow Friday. Odell Abner Dracula said of Lady Demon, I gotta hear this dang podcast, and I don't listen to podcasts. Maya Sunville said, the funniest part is that none of us even listened to the podcast. Jason Martinez, on the other hand, explicitly stated that he was listening to the Lady Demon episode. And Martin Gray said, that was one of the best episodes yet. It's time at Marvel brought out all nude Lady Demon. Sorry, I mean all new. Just to give you folks a fair warning, there will not be a Marvel Superheroes podcast next week. We'll be delivering, finally, the belated second edition of The Underguides, where we will cover Bedlam and Cerebus. Now we'll get back to comments from episode 32, Marvel Universe Live. Siskoid let us know when he had 35 minutes to go, but before I forget what I wanted to say, theater injuries. I feel for the guy, speaking of course of the Marvel Live experience, where the guy experienced a hard-ass fall. Something very much like that happened to me senior year when I jumped off the stage and broke four toes while doing Molieri. Because Frenchie over here. It wasn't superheroes, but it did have a ghost in it. The irony of it is that Molieri always put a character with a limp in his plays because he had an actor with a limp. Guess what character I was playing? Spider-Man. So long as we don't get another origin of Spider-Man movie, that's fine. Uncle Ben suffered enough. The fact he appears in Civil War before the Spider-Man film means he can be established, etc. Maybe they can even blow him up in Civil War so Miles Morales can take over in the main film. I'm not saying I believe it, but I'd like it. Fantastic Four. Mac has never talked more since. In my own circles, friends in the flesh, and on social media, the teaser was met with much more positive reactions, essentially moving everyone from no interest to, oh, that looks pretty good actually. Obviously, Fox is going to keep its universe darker a la X-Men, and I'm forcing myself not to rant about who says Days of Future Past is way overrated. I just liked it very much. Frank's argument that someone who knows zero about the FF could not look at this teaser and say that's the FF is complete nonsense, since the layman in the story doesn't know anything about the FF. Even a clear shot of the Thing or the Human Torch would not tell him it's the FF, because he has absolutely no frame of reference. A rock monster and a guy on fire? I don't get it. If you do know, and it's written right on top of the video that this is the Fantastic Four teaser, well, you do know it's the FF, and a quick Google will fill in the blanks. And Frank, I'm sure that the first FF did well, but it was still a terrible, terrible film, if only for the amount of brazen product placement. They really did need to state, this is most definitely not that version of the FF. Here's what I get from the teaser. Instead of space, they'll go to the negative zone. Q fights in oxygenated space, which is cool. Possibly fight Annihilus. Dr. Doom is part of the group that gets zapped, but he doesn't get powers, just a scarred face. So he hates the others. A good plan for the franchise would be to make Annihilus the villain in this one, with Doom betraying the team, Rise of Doom if you will.
FF2, time to fight Doom per se. FF3, time to retell the Galactus story properly, with Doom trying to steal the power cosmic and succeeding. That's what I'd do with it anyway.
Real quick on this one, because we already did our back and forth on Fantastic Four, so we don't need to rehash that. Except Siskoid is 100% right in this comment, and you're not allowed to reply to what I just said. I will say that, so they touched a little bit on the retelling of Spider-Man. You saw that they announced that Iron Man and Spider-Man are going to fight in this new stupid fucking movie, right? Yep. So all I'm going to say is in your face and then fix its face. He's not just going to make these tiny little appearances. They're going to full on start corrupting my damn Marvel Cinematic Universe with stupid webhead, dumbass shit, balls, etc.
Did you see that fucking gif they started floating where that badass shot from the Avengers trailer where they're all leaping from the Jeep and they stick Spider-Man in the midst of them? So he's covering Hawkeye?
Up. Yeah. No, yeah. Stop it. Somebody please did that. Stop all of this.
Yeah.
God.
Oh, it's so much better with Spider-Man in there.
Yeah.
More fighting.
You can check our Twitter account for the quick rant I did when they announced all this crap was going to happen. Mm-hmm. Freaking hate all this garbage.
Yeah.
So stupid. My characters took a backseat to this dumbass for long enough. I don't need this crap anymore.
Yeah, that's been part of the great thing about the Marvel resurgence is that after seeing so many Spider-Man movies, we get to see other people now. Just like in DC, I'm a DC fan, and I had to go through all those fucking Batman and Superman movies. And it's funny because I think one of the news sites, like Newsarama, did the top 10 DC movies, and like 8 or 9 of them were Superman or Batman because that's all they fucking made.
Yeah.
Except for, you know, the occasional Steel or Catwoman or, you know, stuff that just didn't click at all.
Well, and like how we were talking about earlier, how in the discussion of independent comics versus mainstream comics, we briefly touched on it, but it's the same thing. Like with Spider-Man, if you start doing stuff that's wrong, you get a whole freaking wave of dumb internet people who get all pissed off and write letters and write emails and spam message boards. That's the great thing about doing these lesser tier characters is you get less people pissed off because they're just grateful they're going to see their characters on the screen. So for me, it's easier for the actors because they don't have to hear all this stupid, dumbass bat. Like, it's got to be like these actors making Star Wars and Star Trek movies. You know what I mean? Like, these people have got to be hounded by fucking fanboys nonstop. There's just less fanboys out there for these lesser known characters. They just want you to see you make a good story, and you don't have to stick to fucking canon. You can go out and do whatever the hell you want. Whereas as soon as they start making one of these dumb Spider-Man movies, it just flares up all over again. So just stop making stupid Spider-Man movies. Leave them alone. You got other great characters. Do those.
Well, no. Period. I mean, Sony doesn't have other great characters. That's one of the reasons why they're willing to work with Marvel so that he appears integrated into the Marvel universe.
True.
They don't have other great characters. If you try to mine deeper into Spider-Man, even Spider-Man's own line is so full of Spider-Man that, what do you do? Spider-Woman, Venom. There's not a lot of places to go with that. There isn't a rich enough universe amongst Spider-Man's family, even. At least Batman, you've got some strong variations on the theme. Nightwing isn't Batman. Huntress isn't Nightwing. Batgirl isn't Huntress. So you've got some variety there. But all the Spider-Man guys, not only are none of them anywhere near as popular as Spider-Man, but they're mostly so close to that mold that they don't offer any real contrast unless they're villains or anti-heroes. That's why, for me, and it's been mentioned on the internet, but and I kind of hope that they do this, I'd love to see Marvel do their Punisher by way of a Spider-Man movie and introduce him as a villain and introduce him as a contrast to Spider-Man, and then they go off and do stuff with the Punisher when they don't have access to Spider-Man, which will happen inevitably.
Yeah, that'd be badass.
Because for me, that's one of the issues with the Punisher is he's got to be part of the Marvel Universe, because every time they try to do a standalone Punisher movie, he's just like every other vigilante character that has been in cinema. If you have to have the Marvel Universe there as well, or he doesn't have a reason to exist as a cinematic character.
And let's face it, Spider-Man's rogues gallery isn't nearly as strong as Batman's rogues gallery.
I would argue Spider-Man's got a really good rogues gallery, and I think they're a very cinematic one. You just have to be willing to embrace the comic bookiness, which Sony has been resistant to. You can't make everything tech. You can't throw a black trench coat over everybody. Sometimes you're just going to have to let a guy with big green wings fly.
No. Like, I think Green Goblin is... It doesn't work.
I was actually referencing the Vulture, but okay.
Let's get Kraven out there. Punisher, that...
Well,
I like
actually,
that.
Kraven's the kind of guy you can put into, like, a black leotard and just have him go hunting people. You don't have to have the colorful costume. What I was trying to say is, if you want to do Mysterio, well, you've got to own the fact that it's a weird-ass-looking character. You've got to do a weird-ass-looking character on the screen. You don't have to faithfully adapt the costume, but you have to know going in that you're going to have to go beyond some techie bullshit, or it doesn't work, because the whole point of Mysterio is he's supposed to be altering your perceptions and make you think he's this being with these bizarre powers, when really it is a stuntman and an FX master in a suit.
Yeah, I think that you bringing up Mysterio helped made my point. Thanks for making me win this. Mysterio sucks, dude. The Sinister Six, Sandman, Rhino, these guys are freaking terrible, dude. These are some crappy villains, man. Hobgoblin? You mean...
I like Hobgoblin. No, actually, I think Hobgoblin's more cinematic than the Green Goblin.
Oh, wait, 10 times more. But the problem is you can't use him because you already had Green Goblin.
Well, no, that's when you replace Green Goblin after you killed him in the first movie instead of just having his kid be Green Goblin 2 and even more Power Ranger-y looking.
Oh, my God. Yeah, see, so... Thanks. Whereas with Batman, I don't know. I don't give two shits about Batman, but you're 100% right. His supporting cast is a billion times stronger because they went on to have at least semi-successful comic book careers, whereas all the Spider-Man derivatives are all shitty, not successful.
Well, I don't know if you're aware of this, but as a for instance, they had this thing in the Spider-Man universe called One More Day, and it involved altering the history of some of his characters. So Flash Thompson, his high school bully and one of his buddies, ended up going to a rock and having his legs blown off, and so they gave him the Venom symbiote and he became like a Punisher slash Venom combination for a while there, and he's currently serving in Marvel's versions of Guardians of the Galaxy. Did I just get a headache? Yeah, I thought so.
I literally started to throw up and then stopped. I was able to hold it in. Holy cow. That was close, though. Hey, pause while I cough for a second.
Okay.
Oh, my God. Okay, for our next comment.
You want me to read the Kyle Benning? Because usually it involves him tearing you apart, and
it's super
long.
He's talking about me in this one, and it's also really long, so you talk about you too.
Kyle Bidding wrote, more on the Fantastic Four. One, first, I think I posted my comment regarding the Fantastic Four movie before the teaser hit that said nothing in the trailer said this is a Fantastic Four movie to me. Most of the positive feedback I've seen regarding the trailer are from people with a passing interest in the Fantastic Four. Yeah, they know who they are and may have followed their book occasionally, but they really aren't all that invested in Fantastic Four and haven't followed them for decades. I have. They are my single favorite superhero team, so I guess I just want to see them done right. And nothing released regarding this movie has pointed to any version of the Fantastic Four that has ever shown up in the 616 Marvel Universe. Do I expect a direct adaptation? No. But I would hope that they would pay some very heavy respects to the source material of the property that launched Marvel Comics into the Silver Age. Two, don't confuse a good and entertaining movie as being the same as a good property movie. This movie could look great and be entertaining as hell, but if it doesn't capture any of the elements of what makes a Fantastic Four who they are, then it really isn't a good Fantastic Four movie. New Trek and Man of Steel are other examples, at least in my opinion, of that. Those movies tend to not sit well with many longtime fans of those characters. While fast-paced and entertaining does not capture the Star Trek feel or military protocol that has been present in all past iterations. That means that while they may be entertaining or deemed good movies, they are not good Star Trek movies because they failed, according to many, in its goal to be a Star Trek movie. I enjoy the action of New Trek. They are movies I would consider good as their own thing, but I would not call them good Star Trek movies. Does that make sense? The same can be said about Man of Steel, which it seems like there's a fair split between fans of the movie and its detractors. I myself see no redeeming qualities in that film. Many think that while it can be entertaining and pretty to look at, but it fails in its goal to be a movie about Superman. To many, it is a movie about Batman with superpowers, which you may enjoy, but it still fails the task it set out to accomplish. So essentially, this movie could be a great entertaining flick with loads of drama and other great special effects, but if it doesn't even get close to capturing the Fantastic Four in more than name alone, it will be a failure in the eyes of loyal, longtime FF fans. If you don't want to make a movie about the FF, call it something else. To tie this into some of your past discussion, this would essentially be what you guys argue about with regards to an Aquaman movie. I think the general consensus among the three on the show is that it would be fun to watch, but you are all wary that it will be like watching a Namor movie under the banner of Aquaman. While it may be awesome to watch and be a great Namor movie, it would fail its goal to be a movie about Aquaman. 3. I think that most concepts trying to modernize the Fantastic Four fall flat as they ignore the era that spawned them. To me, the Fantastic Four are the perfect example of the sci-fi space race age of the late 50s through 1960s. That is the cultural tone that birthed the Fantastic Four, and you can't have the Fantastic Four without it. Just as Captain America needs World War II as his origin, the Fantastic Four needs the 1960s sci-fi space era as theirs. The Cap movie works so well embracing the period piece feel. So why not with the Fantastic Four? Simple solution, make the movie a period piece and set the Fantastic Four's origins in that time period. It's the early 1960s, Reed Richards, scientific prodigy, comes up with his own space plane, and he and the cast of the FF launch into space to explore some cosmic anomaly. You embrace the era, boom, they get doused in cosmic radiation and get their powers. You embrace the era to get them their origin. The next step, embrace more of the science fiction and experimental science that the team is known for, and have them transport to the modern day. You can have it be the space incident itself, in addition to the cosmic rays, they go through a wormhole and find themselves in the 21st century. Or you have them land back in the 1960s, do their Fantastic Four thing for a bit, and have one of Reed's experiments go horribly wrong, and they find themselves in the future present day. So then you'd have a movie with 1960s space race, time travel, and Reed's advanced experiments. That's how you capture the tone of the Fantastic Four. Based on Frank's comments, it sounds like he and I are on the same wavelength here, and he gets where I'm coming from. Mac, since I gave you such a hard time last time, I do have to give you props on some of your comments from the past few episodes. All of my comments are said in jest and good humor. Mac's role is definitely a constant funny part of the show. I could listen to talk about Iron Man comics all day. You and I are definitely in agreement and on the same wavelength when it comes to Iron Man stuff. Good stuff.
So, I don't know. I just don't know if you could do the whole 1960s family transported to 2015. Could you do that? Is that interesting or not?
Here's the thing. I like the idea of a Fantastic Four movie set in the 1960s. I'm pretty sure that the licensors that want to put them on cups and t-shirts don't like that idea. And I'm not even sure if they can do that since Marvel, I think, can poo-poo all that stuff. So it gives them a little bit of a license to be daring in that way. I think that there are ways that you can just have the Fantastic Four in the modern era. Their origin is tricky, but it's not like, you know, Robin's a acrobat in a circus, which you just doesn't make the slightest bit of sense in right. The modern era. That's one where it's like you almost need to have Robin come through time for him to keep his origin at all, like any element of that for the most part. But the Fantastic Four, well, we just had that Interstellar movie where it's like we've got global warming and the crops are dying and we have to find a way of getting to another planet. So you could create a situation like that. For instance, take Armageddon, where you got a great big hunk of rock that's coming toward the Earth and we have to pull everything together as quickly as possible, go up to space and blow that thing up. And because you needed guys who were experts in explosions, you got Bruce Willis's riggers. There are ways to work within the modern era to address the needs of the original 60s stories without actually setting in the 60s. But for me, I do think that would be kind of cool. I don't see that ever happening. But I would love to see the Mad Men version of the Fantastic Four on screen.
So here's my one problem with the time travel thing. And it's that Cap can do it, and movies about World War II are interesting. I think space race movies, I don't think anybody, does anybody give a shit about the space race anymore?
It would be tricky because we've actually kind of seen those movies too. You've already seen the right stuff. You've already seen Apollo 13. I've heard, like, when Leonard Nimoy died, they kept talking about how inspired NASA people were, like the people who grew up to work at NASA were inspired by Star Trek. And I don't hear that as often with Star Wars. What I hear is that Star Wars killed the public interest in the actual space race because getting a man into a rocket and sending him to the moon just wasn't as exciting as the space opera of Star Wars. I think that that's somewhat true when it comes to the Fantastic Four, is if you try to go back and do the right stuff with superheroes, I don't think it'll resonate because the people who were there for that, the people for whom that would resonate, are old and they're dying. And you need to find a way of making the Fantastic Four relevant to the younger generations. It would somewhat be self-defeatist, but at the same time, I kind of understand where he's coming from because you can't remove Captain America from the World War II era because he doesn't make sense. The character that's pure, so pure and so patriotic and such an ideal version of what America should be has to exist in a simpler time. He can't come out post-Watergate. They've tried and it just doesn't work. So he has to be part of that era. Well, the Fantastic Four were really the first Marvel heroes. They may not have been the first ones chronologically, but they're the ones who launched the modern era of Marvel as of the 1960s. There is some desire I can see to try to put them back into that role. They should be the first heroes. And one way to do that would be the whole time travel aspect. Yeah, I just think it's too convoluted and I don't think that the space race aspect would resonate with modern audiences, but I totally understand the desire to go there. I would love to go there, but I'm old. I'm only getting older. I'm not the target demo. And I think that people too much younger than me wouldn't give a shit. You think about how the movie's going to play 10 years from now and 20 years from now. It's just going to become less and less relevant. And you're basically condemning the Fantastic Four to always be irrelevant to modern audiences, to always be a nostalgia property, which I think is a slow death.
Well, it's not like having Dr. Doom, as you called, a doxing internet troll isn't going to date it in 2 years either.
Well, that's
right?
Going too far in the other direction.
It's going to date it immediately.
Is he going to surf through virtual reality too?
Yeah, exactly. Is he going to get stuck in an arcade game? my point is that World War II still resonates. People are like, oh shit, Captain America's running around in a super dopey American flag uniform. But then they say, yeah, because he fought in World War II, dude. Like, you don't get it? The patriotism and everything where everybody stopped doing everything and they were converting entire factories into just making warplanes to win. Like, to me, World War II still resonates. You can have a guy running around in a dopey star-spangled costume because it was World War II. People just completely will buy into it to say, yeah, but the Fantastic Four, you don't get the exploration, the need to want to go into space and all this stuff. No. Nobody gets it. People see NASA in a lot of ways as just a gigantic waste of money now, whereas a war is a war. just flying into space to see how far you get into space, I think it just is flat out not interesting to people. I just don't think they buy in. I'm not saying it's not a shame at all. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying I don't think it would work. I could totally. I'm not saying it doesn't. It's not going to work. You could tell a great story like that, but it's not going to be popular, and there's no way you're going to, a movie studio is going to do it because of what I just said and what you said. People have no interest in it anymore. So,
well, that, and it alters the way that you perceive the characters, because while I can see where pulling them out of their time and into our time would alienate them further, and they would make more sense because of the way that they react to the world and feel like freaks and such if they came from another time where there weren't already mutants established, since they're supposed to share a cinematic universe with the X-Men anyway. But at the same time, you can accomplish that in ways that don't create such a dissonance, because you're altering the chemistry of the characters if you pull them out of time. You know, you are creating another layer of mythology that hasn't existed in the comics. You're trading out one radical revision for another radical revision. So that's where, exactly, I think the main problem is. And it's another thing you're going to have to explain further down the line. It's just going to pick up steam and cause more and more problems over the course of time. I think that you just have to reinvent them for a modern era. And from the looks of it, they're taking elements of the Ultimate Fantastic Four that Warren Ellis was doing and Mark Miller, where instead of a space race, they're experimenting with teleportation. It's not necessarily the way I would go, because there's something sexy about climbing to a rocket ship and blasting off into the unknown, but there are still better ways of addressing the changes that have been wrought since the creation of Fantastic Four than to literalize the complication.
Yes, I agree with all of that. I'm glad that you've now completely gone on my side with this Fantastic Four movie.
you restricted me from addressing that, so I'm just gonna leave it alone.
That's how I've construed your comments. Okay.
I want to point out, though, that Siskoid added one logical fallacy to counteract my own logical fallacy. So,
wait, what? Siskoid did what?
Well, he's trying to create this person that isn't that's completely virgin to the Fantastic Four, which wasn't what I'm trying to say. I'm saying that if you saw the cartoons and you have a vague, or just remember seeing them on you know, folders and stuff when you were a kid, that there's nothing in the trailer that would make you connect one thing to the other thing. I didn't mean that there's some virginal person out there that has no awareness of any comic book heroes and therefore doesn't know anything about the Fantastic Four.
No, what Siskoid was saying was that if you're watching a trailer that ends in it saying Fantastic Four, then you know that you were just watching a trailer about the Fantastic Four. Okay. I thought that you were the one who was saying there was somebody who's in some sensory deprivation room being shown random slides of a teaser trailer, and then they never know what the name of it was or what it was supposed to be.
I thought we agreed not to discuss this.
You brought it up, man, not me. Okay.
This last one is, I believe, from Guano Man.
Really? Did you send me that?
Did I not send you that part? Okay, well, I think I have one more missive from Guano Man. Hello, gentlemen. First, thanks for reading my Facebook post about the podcast, and once again, apologies for seemingly neglecting the other hosts in favor of Frank. What can I say? Fans of the Martian Manhunter are a small and endangered group. We have to stick up for each other. That said, on this episode, I have to take Mac's side on the FF discussion. I'm so tired of the oft-repeated trope that real fans of Fantastic Four all hate this movie with a passion. It's a classic example of the no true Scotsman logical fallacy. I'm a big fan of FF and have been reading their comics for decades, and I'm looking forward to this film. True, it's not based on any of my favorite eras of the FF, but it is clearly heavily based on Ultimate Fantastic Four, putting the lie to the oft-repeated myth that it has no relation to the comics. What people really mean is, it's not based on my favorite FF comics, and that's fine by me. I think we forget to what extent even the best Marvel movies are. A, heavily influenced by the Ultimates universe, and B, adapted for a different medium. The MCU and X-Men movies are all pretty far from what I consider the classic incarnations of their respective properties, but that doesn't diminish them one bit. At the core of FF are a sense of family and a sense of wild sci-fi adventure. We've not seen any of the interpersonal dynamics in the teaser, so there's no basis at all on which to judge that yet. However, Trank is very character-oriented, as his work on Chronicle shows. I'm quietly confident that he'll nail that. As for adventure, the teaser clearly shows some kind of portal between worlds, which I'm guessing is the negative zone, so it's clearly not going to be as grounded as the detractors would have us believe. Also, there is an implication that FF is just goofy Technicolor comic book fun, so the film should reflect this. I feel this diminishes the FF. It's not as if the classic comics were never serious or dark in tone. One of the most universally celebrated runs of FF is John Byrne's, which was full of serious storylines and grim themes. And that's the key. As long as the family character dynamics are in place, the tone of the adventure doesn't really matter. In fact, it can work well as a point of contrast, e.g. Johnny and Ben affectionately needling each other in the face of global extinction. Lastly, as Matt quite rightly asserts, the last two FF movies were more superficially faithful to the classic comics, but not that great or that successful. And it's entirely understandable, desirable even, that a new contrasting approach would be taken. I'm keen to see how it works out. If this film tanks, it's possible a further reboot might swing further the other way, and we'll get a full-on retro 1960s set Kirby-tastic flick full of giant mole men monsters, which I would love, but would probably be vastly expensive and only of niche interests. Anyway, I'm now breaking my vow to myself that I wouldn't post anything else about the new FF movie until I've seen it, because, like everyone else, I don't know yet how it's going to turn out. I shall wait and see. Regards, GMX. I want to see the Mole Man movie now. That would be that. It's one of those instances like Iron Man where the Mole Man's not that interesting in comics, but that shit would work on a screen. The Fantastic Four versus Godzilla and his monsters. Holy shit, that would be an awesome movie.
For real. No, I think that would work.
That's kind of what I was hoping. I wanted to see Walter White versus Godzilla. I didn't get that. So give me fucking Reed Richards. I'll take it.
Yeah, we got totally ripped off. I'm not going to rant on Godzilla again, but that stupid teaser made me so mad.
It does occur to me, though, that Walter White playing Reed Richards would have been pretty bomb.
Holy cow, that would have been fucking badass. Holy cow.
You're picturing it now, right? It'd be awesome. I'd suddenly be a Mr. Fantastic fan with that voice and everything.
What's her name? Gunn from, what's his wife's name? Who's the actor?
Oh, yeah, something Gunn. She was in Deadwood, too.
Yeah, she could totally be Sue Storm.
No. She could pull that off, yeah.
Oh, my God. And fucking Jesse Pinkman is
so yeah, and the brother-in-law playing the Thing. Holy shit.
Holy cow. Wait, did we just watch The Fantastic Four for like 5 years and not realize?
Holy shit. And you got the whole interpersonal dynamics. Everything's all complicated. They're all kind of fucking with each other and shit.
God, he drives a Pontiac Aztec, which is absolutely the vehicle that Reed Richards would drive. Because it's so Kirby-esque. It's so practical. Like, of course Reed Richards would drive a Pontiac Aztec. Oh God, this all makes sense now. I gotta go back and rewatch Breaking Bad. Holy cow. Anyway. Anyway, this is a pretty good comment. Like I said, we've got a really good dynamic of listeners who feel one way about Fantastic Four and then feel the other way. So I think it's gonna be interesting. When that movie drops, we're gonna definitely podcast about it, I think.
Yeah. I more and more, it seems likely we're going to see that, unless it's just a total turd.
Well, I think even if it's a total turd, we should watch it for the sake of the podcast. We got to do it for the podcast.
We may have to do it for the podcast. Here's the thing, though. I was never the guy who saw a movie multiple times in the theater. But, you know, I've done multiple movie viewings of Avengers, on the Cap movies. So while I wouldn't necessarily go out and fork out my money for a Fantastic Four movie, especially one that I didn't know for sure was going to be good going into it, I certainly didn't see the other ones when they were in the theaters, I guess I could spend my money to see it the one time for the podcast.
Okay, no, this is what we're going to do. All right, we're going to wait until like the last few days that this movie is in theaters. I'm talking like on a Tuesday. We're going to take off work. We're going to set up all the podcasting gear in a theater, and we're gonna straight up MST3K this movie, and we're going to watch it with the mics and headphones on.
Yeah, we'll go out to that so-called Dollar Cinema out in Webster and do it there.
There is no way there won't even be an employee there. Like, he's going to clock in, the movie, and then clock out and leave.
Yeah, just give you an example. I saw the last showing of Captain America the First Avenger out at Webster, and the film broke. So I actually got to see that film die during its last showing before they changed it out and put in another film.
When
the film broke, trying to find somebody to go in there and do something about it took a little while, took a little doing. And it wasn't a big place either. It just, nobody gave a shit.
Well, that's like super poetic.
Point being is, this is doable. You're joking, but this is actually kind of doable.
I know. It's totally doable. your story there, my contrast was that when I was watching Iron Man 3, the power went out in the movie theater and we got rain checks. So I had to sit through half of that movie that I hated and then have to go back and, because I had to finish the whole fucking movie.
Yeah. Did you say Iron Man 3? I wasn't sure if you actually put the 3 in there.
Iron Man 3. So we watched the first half and it sucked. Power goes out and we had to come back the next day and watch the whole thing over again. It made me very upset. So. All right, cool, man. Well, hey, that's the mail.
Well, except that technically that would still be copyright infringement and us and our equipment would all get impounded.
No, you wouldn't be able to really hear the movie.
I don't want to leave that up to a Texas circuit court judge to decide.
I don't know. If it bombs, nobody will care.
Here's my problem is every time I've heard somebody on the internet do commentary tracks, it's sucked, and I'd rather not set us up for failure.
Okay. I think that we could do it. I think just not the right people have been doing it. All right, man. Well, hey, I got bad news.
What's that?
I've run out of time.
The Marvel Superheroes podcast is in no way affiliated with or endorsed by Marvel Entertainment. All characters mentioned and audio clips employed are believed covered under fair use, with no infringement intended against their copyright holders. The views expressed in this podcast are assumed legitimate, truthful, and solely possessed by the speaker.
Oh, am I getting the intro?
Nah, I'm hearing okay. You okay right now.
Okay.
I've been pulling back again because of the dry mouth. I'm going to have to start having water for these sessions. I don't want to be doing this to you.
So,
but it does cut into the laughter and reaction shots, unfortunately. You hear this little snidely every now and again, but otherwise it's like you're talking into a vacuum. You've got no audience. I'm sorry about that.
That'll be the stinger after your outro. It'll just be us talking like that. And then
just to show how poorly jury-rigged this gig was, at one point I had like this tape deck looking Radio Shack recorder, and what I would do is I'd plug that in and I'd record the output from the computer with that, but mine would be recorded on a whole other on the Audacity on the computer, and I'd have to try to sync all that stuff up. So I'd always wanted to do like a Garfield without Garfield, where it's just Mac talking into space to nobody, just to make him look like a schizophrenic or something.
Nice.
Your breaks are making me thirsty.
Yeah, I just grabbed something out of the fridge so I can.
Your fridge is a lot closer than mine, man.
Well, I'm holding a tablet and I've got headphones plugged into it, so I'm able to be mobile. I'm walking around trying to find a good signal.
I need to make that like your intro. One thing I want to do with people is do like a third person intro like they did in Secret Wars. And that's like going to be your power. You're the guy who's got the tablet that's mobile that allows you to go get a drink out of the fridge.
Hey, I'm thinking ahead.
I'm trapped here on the ground, you son of a bitch.